Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-hosts, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Thursday, October 6th. Welcome to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I am Scott Fullerton, your co-host, along with co-host, as always, Kevin Hogan. Kevin, how are we doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, my friend. I can hear that you're a bit stuffed up after your New England adventure, though. Oh, my goodness.
I'm a bit stuffed up. We have the yin and the yang. You have a great two-week vacation or week and a half vacation, and then you have the other half where we come home, we got a little cold from it, and Mom had a gallbladder attack. Our first day home, we were in the emergency room until 2 in the morning, and but it's all good. It's all good. I may be blowing my nose like a Hurricane Matthew throughout the show, but we will try to keep it down to a minimum here.
Well, just so our listeners know, Scott, you and your mom were here. Well, I was saying to you just before we went on the air, it's like New England had the night sweats when you guys were here. So you guys were really, you know, toughing it out during some lousy New England weather. So we'll have to have you back another time when the weather's better.
Exactly. But we did have a great trip, and you and I were just barely missing each other because you were busy in Washington, and then we were trying to run some stuff through to get through and just didn't make the connection. But it was a beautiful trip. We saw just the very tip of the leaves changing, which was nice, and had some great food, stayed in some great places, and had a great time. And somewhere between your little Rhode Island and Hershey, Pennsylvania, the flu bug, but that's all right.
I'm so sorry, my friend. I'm so sorry. Well, health to all of you there. And we got so many Massachusetts, Ohio connections right now between sports, politics, and everything else. You know, the Red Sox are playing the Indians, and then I think the Bruins are opening in Ohio. I was just thinking of it the other day. Between sports, politics, and everything else, there's so much between Massachusetts and Ohio right now.
It is a crazy time in sports ball history there. But yeah, lots of fun stuff going on.
So I'm going to
rally through the beginning here, and then we have a fantastic guest today. We have Faith Cheltenham from Binet USA, who, of course, introduced you in Washington, D.C. this week.
Yep.
I'm going to turn the conversation over to you two in a little bit, but it's going to be a great show today.
No worries. She's a dear friend. She's a wonderful bi leader and someone who has, by the way, we might get her to actually admit this on air as well. She's a pretty funny person. She's done a little bit of stand-up comedy and a whole bunch of other things in her time. So she'll be a great interview, and I'm really excited to get her now, after catching her breath a bit, I hope, to talk about what three trips to the White House were like. But, you know, what's next? Because it's a very exciting and strange time there in Washington.
It is a strange time. We have this election. I mean, I never, you know, as big a political junkie as I am, I never thought I'd see the day where I'd say, I can't wait till this dang thing is over. It's just getting crazier by the day between these debates.
You're in the front line. It seems like no matter what happens, those it's the results in Ohio that seem to be so close to the tipping point there.
Yeah, I think and it's kind of going both ways. I think Ohio is going pretty strong for Trump. And so he's part of that, and I believe that the Hillary camp now is kind of downplaying Ohio because it's not needed for her to win, but they don't want to get people's hopes up. So it's interesting. I thought for sure that a Republican has to have it to win it, but it looks like from what I can see, North Carolina might even be the tipping point as far as it goes. If Trump can't win North Carolina, he pretty much doesn't have a shot, even if he gets the rest of the other ones. So that's becoming more of a battleground. Yeah. And it changes by the day, so it's crazy. We need to start off the show by definitely sending some good thoughts down to our people down south, South Carolina, Florida. And
absolutely.
It's going to be a little messy there for a couple of days.
Yeah, and then keep going south from there down to the poor folks in Haiti. Imagine living in a tent after an earthquake and then having that weather. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing the ability. We lost Kevin for a second. He'll click it back in a second. Sometimes his phone jumps on us. But like Kevin was saying, it is just amazing how a place that got so devastated 4 or 5 years ago by an earthquake rebuilds with a lot of help from a lot of people so quickly, and then have this go through. It's kind of messy. But Kevin, I think we have you back now. Nope, we still don't have Kevin back. All right, well, Kevin, back on
a
second.
We still there? We're still there. I'm here.
Now
whoa.
We
hey, it looks like Matthew is blowing the communication satellite away from Boston's coast here. So I'm back.
It could be. Well, we
live
got
radio.
Back, so we're good. We are good
live
to go.
Live radio.
You gotta love it, right?
Absolutely.
It happened. But yeah, you're right. You're making a point on Haiti too as well. But it's been a hard time down there.
Yeah. Yeah, so hope all those folks, hope this thing moves as, you know, harmlessly as it can. But those things are monsters. They're just such big storms. Oof.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, it goes 20 miles. They said at one point when it was down, I think, over Cuba, it was as big as the state of, like, Arizona, as far as it goes. It's just a huge, massive 20, just huge. And the storm surges, they can go. My brother lives in South Carolina, as you know, just right over the border from Charlotte. He's inland enough that they might get some rain, and that's about all that will happen there. But there's so much going on the coastal areas. And the way it's set to go now, the maps are all telling that it may do a U-turn and come back and do a pass through. So
that's strange. Yeah, that's absolutely strange. But we get that up here with snow sometimes in New England. It'll go up, and then it'll turn around, and we get the tail end of it. It's just like you get a second part of the storm, and that we get that with snow sometimes. So it can happen. Yikes.
Too much, I'm telling you. What else been going on for your week? You're always busy doing something. What's this week been entailing?
Well, one of the things on the I just want to bring this – thanks for mentioning it. One of the things I wanted to mention is while I was busy while you guys were around here, one of the things I was doing was catching my breath after Washington, but to write a new section in the Huffington Post for us in the Healthy Living section. But people can just either – you know, it's featured on the social media and all the rest, but there's a new article that I wrote called To Serve and to Stigmatize with a question mark after it. And it's a takeoff, naturally, if people recognize it, to serve and to protect is the LAPD motto. And for those of us that were of a certain TV generation, do you remember where we grew up seeing that all the time?
It's got to be either like Chips or Adam 12 or something along one of those.
You just got it in the second one. Now, I'm not saying that it wasn't Chips. I can't say that it wasn't there. But for me personally, that's how the article starts off with, is being, you know, seeing this statement as something that I grew up with, you know, watching Adam 12. Now, at the same time, recently, and the connection I realize is, you know, one is, you know, television and, you know, as a child, and the other thing is something that's going on recently. But trust me, the connection is there. There's been, and again, in Massachusetts and Ohio, where I think we have an opioid crisis that's ripping so many families, individuals, and communities apart. We, you know, without any kind of connection here, there was police departments that I am not trying to say anything bad about, but what I'm trying to show here is a trend of posting and using social media and photos and images of alleged drug overdoses and posting that, if you will, to purposely, under the guise of education, but ultimately shame, and it stigmatizes those that are, you know, caught in this very, very unfortunate situation. So I wrote about it because there needs to be this conversation, I believe, going on, and I'd really, really like our listeners, when they get the chance, to go and check that out. It's, again, To Serve and to Stigmatize with a question mark in the Huffington Post. Yeah.
Good deal. Good to honor you for that. You've had a couple of great articles go through the Huffington Post recently, so that is all kinds of awesome.
It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure. It really is. And I try to, you know, that when something happens like that and you notice it happening and it becomes a trend, that's one of the things where I'm so grateful to be encouraged by so many people in different working committees and all the rest to say, no, if it's in your wheelhouse and you see this happening, that's where I feel the need to write about it. It's not that, you know, I think we said this before. It's not like I feel like I'm committed to something that's weekly or whatever. I'm writing for the book. I'm working on that with Dr. Gallitzer Levy. That's a pleasure. But in the meantime, I think the articles are when it needs to be said, when something happens. And those things in Massachusetts and Ohio, the opioid crisis, it's not slowing down. It's terrible.
Right.
We need to learn how to do it. We need to learn how to help all the individuals without creating more stigma while disarming the stigma that's already there. It sounds like a slippery road, but it's possible with the proper training for everyone, first responders, law enforcement officials that are working so hard, as well as the general public. I know because I do it all the time.
Right, exactly. Now,
what about you? Other than bringing the flu back to the Rust Belt, what have you been up to?
Well, like I said, we were finishing up the trip. It was a great trip all through New England there. We went through upstate New York, through Massachusetts, through Vermont.
Yep.
I got to go to Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream Factory
in
Vermont.
Yeah, I was
that
there.
Those
are the happiest cows on earth.
Exactly. It was so much fun. And
yep.
We got to take a little tour of the plant there. And it's so – they're so, I guess – eco-conscious, family-conscious, friendly-conscious.
Yep.
They're such peace-love dove. It's great.
What about the tasting room at the end?
Oh, my goodness. I know. So good.
It's like being in a frozen Willy Wonka. For me, it was like being in a frozen Willy Wonka exhibit or something. It was amazing.
I just like, give me the 5-pound vat of Chunky Monkey and I'm a happy camper.
And plus, the whole time you've been taking that tour, they're actually just bragging about all these wonderful, wonderful ingredients. And it is. I mean, it's done so well to get it. But you're like, oh, just give me – by the time you get to the end, it's like, just give me some of this luscious ice cream, yes.
Exactly. Then it's so cute. You go up this little hill there and they have this little – park up the hill where they have the ice cream graveyard of all the flavors that are not coming back ever again.
Yep.
And they have the little tombstones with all these ice cream flavor names. It was a really fun little time. So that was fun in Vermont.
That's cool.
And we went to then back through New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and we were in Boston for just a night. And that was kind of fun. And then we went to but I got to tell you, we made it to Boston, and you can relate to this. We made it to Boston at 4:30 in the afternoon to get to our hotel.
Yep.
And I think I told you last time is we didn't really plan hotels ahead of time, but we waited till we got to the city. So I found a hotel that I liked at the price I wanted, and I put it in my little GPS thing, and it's 4:20 in the afternoon, and the hotel was exactly 11.2 miles from where we were at, and it took us exactly 48.6 minutes to get there.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a wonderful, but it was kind of cool. It took us through every Boston neighborhood I can think of. We were in the really nice areas, the really not so nice areas, the really kind of cool with ponds, the kind of, we went by Newberry Street, went by, it took us off the freeway because it was so crazy. And so we went through all these neighborhoods, and it was fun trip.
Oh yeah,
like,
did you go between like Boston Common and where the duck boats are there, the Public Garden probably when you're going through there?
We
because
did drive
everybody
by. We really
can...
want to do the duck tour. That was one of the things on our list, but then of course it was raining those 2 days, so we couldn't do it. But,
it's a great cross. It's a great way to cross across the city. So I'm not going to give all my secrets out, but you're absolutely right. If you got the GPS there, or if you grew up with it, there's certain ways that you know to get around there, and there's other ways. My God, if you go the wrong way, you're just going to be stuck there until probably after your hotel and you've checked out, because there are some ways now that are just around rush hour. It's not good. They're not friendly.
But and then we made Providence our like headquarters for 2 days because the trouble with the trip is we didn't really plan it. Since we didn't plan it out, every day
I couldn't figure out where you were going. You guys were just going.
I
couldn't figure out where you guys were going to be next because you were just going which is great. You guys are just having fun with it. And it is all next door to each other here. And going from Providence is just brilliant. You can travel everywhere from there.
Well, that's kind of the wild thing, too, is that no matter where we were in our trip, we're only 10 hours from home. Literally, we went 1,900 miles on the car, but we were never more than 10 hours from home because everything is so close and tight up there. So it was really cool. But it's like, but because we didn't plan, it's like I needed a day where I didn't have to pack and unpack every day. So we spent 2 days in Providence just because I was sick of packing and packing every day. And we used that as a base of operations, went around, took up, but that was a rain day too, but it was fine. We went to the local casino near Providence, and we took it to the Foxwoods in Connecticut and took a nice drive.
Yep.
Now, have you taken that drive down 95, Connecticut from Rhode Island through Connecticut ever towards New York? You've taken that drive down there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, what
oh, yeah.
is it with the Dunkin' Donuts at every stop? I was loving life because there's every single off ramp you see a Dunkin' Donuts sign. And it was
Okay, here's the thing, and I got to tell you this: New Englanders, they don't like to be too far from their CVS's and their Dunkin' Donuts. All right, because we're always preparing for, like, you know, some kind of Armageddon or some kind of tailgate party that's going to be held during a blizzard, or you know what I'm saying? Like we're only as optimistic as our GPS tells us we're as near as we can be to either a CVS or a Dunkin' Donuts, and that's the God's honest truth. Because when they say America runs on Dunkin' Donuts in New England, they're telling the truth.
It was fantastic. I mean, we left it, honestly, like the first off-ramp out. I said, we'll get coffee now because it's only like a 45-minute drive down to the casino. We haven't had coffee yet. And I said, I need to get coffee. Who knows if we'll find anything on the drive down? Because I know the thing about New England, too, when you're not from New England, is everything's hidden by trees. There's trees everywhere in the freeway. You can't see anything to the side. You have no idea
where
like, because
we don't like to give our hand away. We don't like to give our hand away. We let those trees actually grow over the signs, so you can't even see the signs. And if you use your signal, it means, you know, if you use your directional, it means you're a tourist. So we don't like to show our hand away on the highway. That's a sign of weakness.
Exactly. So it's like I said, we won't be able to see a Dunkin' Donuts. I said, I don't know if there'll be any place to get coffee for the drive. Now, let's stop this first exit, even though we just got in the car, and we'll get our coffee. And so I said, okay. And then all of a sudden, literally, look, we could have got Dunkin' Donuts there.
You actually see them. That's how you can tell you're not from here. You actually see them. We just get off and assume by the time we hit the break that we can somewhere see the DD sign. You know what I'm saying? We get kind of itchy when we don't see it there. Yeah.
I love it. That is too much fun.
You're getting it. Well, I remember when I was driving further down south at times. What was it? The Bob Evans restaurants.
Oh yeah, that's a big time around here.
And that was when I actually went to the original Bob Evans farm. So that was kind of like I got to see the Midwest version of like the Ben and Jerry's Happy Cows and stuff, you know. So yeah, I know. I like how in different areas of the country people have that staple that they look for when they get off the highway.
Exactly. And then we went to as we were going down, we went to Mystic, PA, and walked around the seaport.
Oh, that's
Mystic,
beautiful.
PA, Connecticut, I'm sorry.
Yep, Mystic,
very nice down there. And then our last night was in Hershey. We spent two nights in Hershey, Pennsylvania, because we started not feeling good. So we decided we were going to go to Philadelphia and a couple other places, but we actually cut our trip like 3 days short because Mom was starting to not feel good. But we ended up in Hershey, and that was my first time there. She's been there. We went to the Hershey Hotel, where I feel like I have to turn up my nose a little bit as I say it, because it's very hoity-toity. It's gorgeous.
Oh, really?
But the Hershey.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the Hershey Hotel is amazing.
That's amazing.
It's just gorgeous-looking hotel, and they've really built that whole area up because they have the Hershey Hotel, they have the Hershey Lodge, they have the Hershey Amusement Park, they have the Hershey Stadium, they have the Hershey Botanical Garden, and then all the street lights are in different Hershey candies. So it's really kind of cool. So that was kind of amazing stuff. But
that is some serious confectionery flash. I like it.
Exactly.
I like it. That's cool.
When you check in, you get a Hershey bar. It's all kind of fun stuff. But I will save you from my tale of confectionery woe here. Let's go ahead and see for Faith to come on here, because I'm really excited for you guys to talk. Let's play a little bit of Sam Harris, My Reclamation. When we come back, we're going to have Kevin talking mostly because I'm on this cold medicine, and I had to set an alarm for me to start the show because it's so bad.
Okay.
And so if I fall asleep, I want you to yell at me really loud.
All right, we'll take
it
away.
Back, and we're going to let Kevin talk with the amazing Faith Sheltenham from Binet USA. This is Sam Harris, My Reclamation. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left and Straight Radio. We'll be right back.
When the river is too wide to cross, and the water is raging too fast, when we see the destination but cannot make our way, we will build a bridge of brotherhood and cross the river at last. When the air is cold and black with hate, and the before the condemnation burns our eyes. When the shadows of oppression keep us hidden from the sun, you can climb upon my shoulders until we reach the skies. For it is not enough to want and need it, and deserving doesn't make it true. I believe hate fails and love prevails. Take a stand, demand justice overdue. Singing, no one can take what is not theirs to give. No one can break you or choose how you live. And I don't need permission to have what is mine. This is my reclamation. This is my right divine. I am weary of hostility, and I am saddened by the ugliness of fear. I'm confounded by morality that builds a bitter wall, but I will bear my heart to you so all the world will hear that it is not enough to want and need it, just to forward and to lead. I believe hate fails and love prevails. Rejoice the choice, take our voices to the street.
We are back with that. This is with Sam Harris, My Reclamation. Very appropriate. His time claiming his sexuality. And speaking of that, we are so lucky, Kevin and I, to have Faith Cheltenham on. She's the president of Binet USA and done such a great job over there. And they just had their third visit to the White House last week. I was honored. They actually had it live streamed on the White House press tape there where you could live stream. I got to be able to see just a bit of it the first hour before my live show last week, and Faith was emceeing it, did an amazing job. Of course, Kevin got to do one of his poems there, we found out, which was super thrilling. So I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to both of them so I don't sneeze all over the conversation. Please welcome to the show the amazing Faith Cheltenham and Kevin. Kevin, take it away.
Hey, Faith. How are you?
Hey.
Welcome to Healing Stigma.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm good.
This is wonderful. And just so we know, we've got the country covered now because, and again, welcome to Healing Stigma and Left to Straight Radio. Faith and I have been friends for years, but this is your first time on the show, Faith. So I wanted to let you know that Scott is coming to us from Ohio, where, you know, we are hoping that Scott recovers very quickly and somehow turns the Rust Belt back to sanity and voting. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm coming to you from just outside of Boston. And Faith, you're coming from a little tiny town out on the West Coast there, right?
Well, I'm actually, you know, that's where I'm kind of from the Central Coast, San Luis Obispo, California.
Yeah.
But I'm actually in living outside of like LA, in LA.
Yay.
Who knows, you know. So
we got it covered. We got it covered.
So we're like, you know, coast to coast, which I think is like that, you know, bisexual superpower, right? It's be everywhere, right? Yeah.
Well, I think we've seen each other as much at the White House as we have anywhere else.
You know, that's what people tell me. They're like, I only see you at the White House. And I'm like, oh, well.
Well, how about this, Faith? Let's do this. Let's back up just for a second, because our audience, which is, you know, we have a bunch of listeners from the LGBT community, but we also have a whole bunch of other listeners as well. And I think it would be really fun for them. I've already been so excited, and Scott's been wonderful. You know, any time here that we've had something to do with the White House, people's ears really kind of, you know, they open up. But could we kind of put it in a framework? Why these three visits, if you will, and what it was all about. And naturally, there's no order here in that sense, but really because so many people have been asking you to include or say or do whatever, this is your chance. I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit of what has it been for you, but why these three trips to the White House for BiNet and for the Bi community and for Faith?
Right, right. And for organizations like Bisexual Resource Center, of course, or Bisexual Organizing Project, American Institute of Bisexuality, bisexual.org, et cetera. Right.
Yep.
There's so many of our organizations that benefit so much from these trips. And what we say, I think, is that it's not just like groups that say that they serve nationally. It's also folks that are regional. It's also folks who are city to city. And we saw an evolution, though, in this presidency and this administration, as well as perhaps within the culture. Right? So much so that more people are identifying themselves as bisexual. Right?
Yep.
So it's working. Right?
Yep.
The plan is working for everyone
right.
to come out, right? And it's good because we have to serve folks. We have to really get, and that's where the bi community's needs and issues deeply align with the Obama administration, because we were there from the very beginning when it came to not just implementing ACA, but getting ACA to pass, right? Like,
right, right.
A bunch of us
right.
were organizing and strategizing and thinking, how can we get our communities really excited about healthcare that will take care of all of their needs, right?
Right.
How can we
right.
get people excited about reproductive justice that applies to bi women who have higher rates of certain cancers than
right.
their lesbian or straight counterparts, right? How can we
yep.
get people understanding that Planned Parenthood has to have bisexual-specific training, right, when 42% of bisexual women report being raped in their lifetime to the CDC, right? So these are the things that are, like, really critical, right? Like, I always tell folks, like, more bi guys report being, you know, in a domestically violent, intimate, violent relationship than straight women, right? This is a community that is not being served. Not by their name, at least. So
yeah.
I think that we saw a deep evolution on that, culminating, or let's just say, not even culminating, because there's still a long road.
Of course.
to get people to recognize, you know, but at least within this administration, seeing that there needs to be a public acknowledgement of that. And,
well, can I just jump in? 'Cause, you know,
I'm going to be
the interrupting Irishman here, Faith, because you love
yes,
me for that. But
do.
here's the thing that fascinates me, both in the bisexual community, in the greater rainbow community, and then in other communities looking at this possibly. The gamut of this is amazing to me because, correct me if I'm wrong, but President Obama is the first president to actually, you know, utter the word bisexual, to actually say it, correct?
Absolutely. First president to say it in the State of the Union, the first president to use the word transgender, the first president to post a thing, you know, a convening with lesbians in tech, right? The first president to, you know, be a stalwart companion on the road to end HIV,
right?
For all of, you know, the people that are affected by it, right? Which includes non-binary folks as well, because people love to, you know, make it that dual thing, but that's kind of a bi thing, is to break that binary and get you to think a little bit more expansively, hopefully, inclusively.
Right. Well, that's my point. Now, here's the interesting thing, and this is the thing that I'm so happy we get the chance to kind of now tease it out. You know what I'm saying? After
yeah.
the visit and what's next. Because the thing for me is, I oftentimes feel, and there's going to be plenty of people that can tease out more of the science of the language here. So I'm being a sloppy grammarist, but it's like we've been able to put in a short period of time the word bisexual, not stigmatized, but in a positive way, into both a national, statewide, and hopefully local conversation that affects the things that our community deserves and needs to live a good, healthy, happy life. Now, along the way, it's been fascinating to me to see how sometimes that, you know, the bi it's not fair to say it's the canary in the coal mine, but I often feel for my own self, for my own story, and what I see, I feel sensitive to other issues. So I'm so proud that by like the third time we went to the White House, let's face it, the first trip we really didn't necessarily know. And for listeners, we were there around the time right before one of the government shutdowns. We didn't even know if the government was going to be open when we got there. So everything was literally a question mark, and you had to get to know each other. You know, and now, I mean, and Faith, I think you get this, but when we go back this time, things like, whether it be transgender rights bills, whether it be Black Lives Matter, and especially Black Lives in the LGBT community, these things now, so, you know how I'm saying it? There's something so positive about our community, but there's also something amazing for those not necessarily in our community to understand the road. It wasn't just three trips to the White House and, you know, this was nice and we picked up our mugs, you know, or our matching pen set. There's something here that's amazing about the word, the conversations that we're now in. I mean, I'm going back to Washington. I think I told you, you know this, as part of the working group from the Department of Health and Human Services for the Trauma-Informed Congregations Conference. That's coming up the middle. That's because of these trips. But it's
and
amazing
when I think
of it. And
how many other people are doing that, right? Think about
so
how
many
other folks who came to this meeting were seeing folks starting to release stories about their experience with their organization. They're in newsletters. They're being acknowledged for their trip to the White House, right? And I think that, to me, is really one of the benefits of this administration's work to community engage, right? Like, it's thinking about how it can build up community leadership to be, hey, like, why wouldn't this person be acknowledged with credibility in their own community? Oh, well, there's one big reason. It's biphobia, right? The systemic oppression of bisexual, pansexual, fluid, queer, bi plus people, right? So what can the government do to a certain extent, not even to say these people are awesome, but just to say, let's have a conversation about community.
Right.
It's not
which
about,
is where so much of it begins
assigning,
or not.
You know, exactly. Just talk to folks. Talk to moms and dads and kids and teens and elders. Talk to the families that you know are out there that have these family members that are just throwing their hands up going, well, what about us?
Right.
So, and this is a reality we see for millions of people right now, right? Because we know that there's at least 4, maybe even upwards of 13, depending on what you could see out there, a million bisexual people, right?
Right.
A lot of that data
comes from that
disparity data, though, right? We get those numbers from national surveys that are looking at violence, that are looking at all these issues that affect our lives. So I think that it's important for us to see the White House in a context, right?
Yeah.
It's just one part of this amazing puzzle, and there's all these different people who have interacted with this administration. There's a ton of people who never wanted to interact with this administration.
Yeah.
They are just not into that. And, you know, good for them too, right? Let's be upfront and honest that politics isn't for everyone. Everyone is going to come to their path of advocacy in their own way. Right.
Yeah, let's say cards on table. We didn't have to go through security at the White House. We went there willingly. I didn't see anyone being escorted in.
Well, no. Well, they. You know,
but it's right. I mean, this is one thing I want to say. You brought and others brought a very rich selection of a very interesting group together from the very beginning here, that also and these organizations, for others that might not know it, that Faith mentioned, you know, I'm on the board of the BRC, and Faith, what you do with Binet is just amazing. But there is room for the numbers, as we said, in the bi community, there is room for every single one of these organizations and more that you mentioned to do the good work that they're doing. Because here's the amazing thing, we can still go even on this third trip, and maybe you know the numbers, Faith. I'm not, you know me, I'm a word wrangler, but I'm not a numbers guy. But the amounts of what was it, for just studies and funding and research that has been done for the lesbian and gay community, and then you look at the amount of money for the bisexual community for that research, and it needs to be done, and it is so underwhelming when you see that and you realize, yeah, there's a long road to go here, an important road to go here.
Well, and we have to cheer on those folks who are doing their best to like create bi-specific content,
right,
and getting funded for it. You know, Dr. Wendy Boswick got,
yep,
I think, a grant with a partner working on looking at bi people, bi women of color stigma. I mean, you know, so there's people trying to get grants, and I think if we can try to connect folks to universities that want to, you know, they're interested in doing that research, right?
Right.
Like there's homes for that, and Dr. Brian Dodge has really,
yep,
I think, worked to create a huge home for that with Birch, the Bisexual,
right,
Research Collective on health, for health.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry,
yep,
guys. I always forget it, but it's so amazing. So, like, forgive me, y'all. But
we'll get them on the show here. We'll get them on,
yeah,
the show, and we'll get it right.
Really,
that's not a problem.
Right? Because I tell people, I'm like, you don't think you need to talk about us. Right?
Yeah.
That means you don't think you need to talk about disability. That means that you don't think you need to talk about black women like me, like who I am as a West Indian,
yep,
black American,
yep,
living in this world. Right?
Yeah.
My issues don't really matter, right? So, like, this is the thing. We want people to talk about bisexual issues, right? But we want all communities to be talking about those invisible people, those folks who fall between,
exactly,
the cracks. Right?
Yeah,
like,
because,
you know,
here's the thing, Faith. How do you
life?
Respond? How do you respond? Let me play devil's advocate just for a second here, again, for our listeners, because you're so good at responding to this. We have like a vote coming up here in Massachusetts where on either side, I think it's for extra funding, maybe for like charter schools. And they're trying to play it on, if you vote for this, you're taking money away from public schools and, you know, kids aren't going to have this. And then, of course, on the other side, if you do this, you know, everything's going to go well. And it's being very politicized, let's say. But in this sense, because of and people, I will sometimes hear, well, you know, if something's being funded, if anything's being funded in the rainbow community, then why isn't the bi community served? Why do you need bi-specific research? How does that help everyone, or how does that help the bi community and others? What's the response to that, do you think, Faith?
Well, you know, let me say, personally, I'm not opposed to charter systems, you know, or myself.
You know, I was just using it as
the
example.
Time,
yeah.
I just want to put it out there at the same time that I'm not opposed. I'm also thinking about how charter systems can be systemically oppressive, right?
Yep.
And how can we, like, kind of challenge that in a way that works for everyone, right?
Yep.
And we've seen some of those meditations across the country, right? And
yep,
you can look them up. So that happens, right? And then as a bisexual person, I'm also thinking for myself, okay, I am part of this LGBT community, right? In the sense,
yep,
that LGBT history, like all of it from Pride, from like day one, is part of my tapestry too. So there's,
right,
an ownership there of us all being in this together. What do you mean,
well,
you're
said,
throwing me off of the wagon,
yep,
now? What are you talking,
yep,
about? I've always slept with straight people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on. You slept with them too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just give it up. This whole gay normative, okay, let's just,
yep,
be real. Let's be honest and upfront.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That so much of our battle right now is not just bisexual people who appear straight to the world. It is also,
right,
bi, pan, fluid, queer people who appear gay, who appear,
yep,
queer, who people,
yep,
are not aware that, you know, they'll pretty much fall in love with whoever because they're in love with souls.
Right.
Right. And that's,
right,
the definition of our community going back literally 100 years, right? Bisexual is not,
yep,
a new term. It's not one of these things that came out in the 60s.
Right.
Right. And
right,
like, I mean, like the 1860s or whatever, right? This is,
right,
not.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But now,
so we really
now
have
let me jump in.
Community.
let me jump in. Let's deal with the other, you know, the huge thing in the room that now is, I think, more generational maybe. Then because it's been around for so long, some people hear bi as being a binary term. What's the, you know, again, let's get the party line out there or your personal feeling on that. I wanted to give you that.
I love to have a conversation about binaries, because first I want to like kind of, you know, assault with love, a lot of love, because I also knew this to be 100% true, and had like Robin Oakes herself, like goddess on the mountaintop of bisexuality, right, tell me in 2003 that I was wrong about this, right? So didn't know, and I didn't even know that the gender binary, that the term itself was like popularized by a bisexual trans woman, right?
Right.
So
Jenna
Serrano. So I'm like, oh my gosh, people are not connecting the dots, right? They're getting stopped by something that's really basic, right? And what that stop is, now that I understand it, makes me excited to talk about it. I say, listen, it's very basic. You believe that I, as a bi person, am equally attracted to men and women at the same time. So because of that, you assign a binary to me when none exists.
Exists, yeah.
Right?
Well,
I am not attracted like that.
Yeah.
It's false, wrong. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but what happened was, because people assumed that binary was, that false binary was true, they then made an assumption about bisexuals that made us isolated from our community, isolated from the work we had done. In fact, the place that we had built ourselves. Right.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of our work is really about getting our own people to come out and say, yeah, you can call me gay, you can call me bisexual. Just want you to know, you could also call me bisexual. Right. Because a lot of people will just say, no, 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 they're gay. And it's like, but they have loving relationships with more than one gender.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
would you ever just cut off a piece of a person's self? Right. So what does that do to their emotional health? What does that do to their suicide risk? What does that do to their violence risk, right? They're surviving violence. So it doesn't seem very fair to me personally to insist that one group of people, right, be separated from the whole, right, and then underserved.
Right.
And then on top of that, the final kind of cherry, the final kind of like kind of F you, right?
Yeah.
And then be told that you're privileged, right?
Right, right,
that
right,
you're
right.
Lucky.
Yeah,
or
you're greedy. Yeah, you're greedy.
You want it all, and you're like, just trying to avoid homelessness, right?
Yep,
just trying to survive this catastrophic health consequence, just trying to live my life as a survivor, right?
Yep.
So these are things that are really real for our community members. And I think that hopefully every administration of every White House will, you know, like, find that important, right? But at the same time, know that there needs to be trauma-informed approaches to how we address those severe disparities, right? And that's why I'm really proud about our event, was that we had people who were artists, who were singers, who were all these different things. You
and
know?
Survivors of so many different things, and then leaders in the community, again, from so many different ways, you know, and, you know, the generations that were represented as well, if I can just say that, because the from young to old, the energy in that room was really palpable. It was wonderful.
It was so good. It was so good, and there were so many people who weren't in the room who you lifted up and honored, and, you know, at one point, I wanted just to list all the people who weren't there, and I said, you know, I'm not going to do that, because I'm going to honor the fact that we're here together and that they're here with us.
Right.
Right.
Right,
and that
right.
they're without, you know, the fact that we had lost Ibrahim this year, someone who had meant so much to so many of us in so many different facets, as a faith leader, as a person of color leader, as an elder in the bi community leader, as a writer, as a thinker, like, you know, peacemaker and all this, like, you know, Star King with Berkeley, like, you know, all these things that he had done in his life.
So much,
to lose him. So, you know, because I literally had just saw him last year, and I went out to dinner with him and someone else who's a little bit older than him in the bike community, and we all kind of little did that person think, you know, probably won't see you again. And all of a sudden, Ibrahim was gone, you know? And it
gone,
was like,
yeah.
Oh, my yeah. goodness, I can't even believe that, like, we just lose people so quickly. They're just here with us one day, and then they're not with us the next. And
well, the time
so
is the time is precious. There's no doubt about it. The time is precious. But that's one of the things that in this, I know it's even soon right now to be pushing this, but just taking a step back, Faith, because for me personally, because maybe due to the writing sense, I've had the chance to, you know, for me, put this into perspective and kind of observe it while it's going on. And it's fascinating to me, though, as I said, the distance this has been, and because these three meetings were not the same. You know, there was a very different feel at each one of them. And I'm just wondering, you know, for you, Faith, you know, kind of what can we back it up a little bit for our listeners? What brought you into bi activism and along with this and this journey to the White House? You know, was it what you expected? Was it the kick in, you know, in the ride that you wanted, or was it something else?
You know, I mean, I've had a very varied life myself personally, right? So,
yeah.
You know, previously I might have been more well-known as working with and working for Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I spent this time, people are always like, what?
I love this backstory. That's why I had to ask. I just, go, please, fill our listeners in. We have the best guest, but Faith, listen to this story.
She's one of my most favorite people in the whole wide world, and she's
yep.
a super huge mentor. I always say, and she would say this as well, she teaches people exactly, you know, what she knows of life, what to do, what to
yep.
not do, what to survive, and how to thrive.
Yep.
And I was so honored to be in her employ, and eventually just to have her friendship, and she became my son's godmother, and is
that's lovely.
A light in my life, right? Someone
yep.
I can rely on, and someone I just be the tech person for and the digital person, and
yep.
that's always what I've been there for. And but I've also just really been honored to know lots of different, you know, amazing institutions or be part of different systems,
mm-hmm.
right? And part
yep.
of that's been because I am a woman of color interested in creating change
yeah.
in the long term for all people all the time,
yep.
right? I was raised
yep.
In a very white area. I call myself alterna black because people, I believe, think I'll have a different experience as a black person when I have the exact same experience, right?
yeah.
Yeah. So invalidation, microaggressions, getting pulled over, same. Same. Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm the person who, like, helps out with the technical WordPress, BlackLivesMatter.com.
Yeah.
You can go
yeah.
there. There's a demands list. It's all this stuff. It's amazing. There's all these resources. Okay. So BlackLivesMatter.com. It's a website, too.
Yep.
It's not just a moment, right? It's a movement.
It's not just a moment, no.
So and as a person, I'm coming to the work from that perspective of having that invalidation and then also experiencing
yep.
my bisexuality throughout my entire life and not even having a word to call it, eventually
yep.
settling on queer before falling in love with the bisexual community, you know, after,
yep.
You know, Fritz Klein paid for my student group at UCLA to come down
wow.
to the 2003 bisexual conference in
wow.
North America, Western Regional,
yep.
yeah. Yep, so I went to that.
He
and
is
like,
the name. Yes, the name.
Yeah, right.
For those that
know,
don't know it, that is... That's it. Yeah.
Okay. So let me explain to you that I told Fritz Klein on the phone that I was not bisexual. I only slept with gay men. Right? And he was like, "That's bisexual, sweetie." And he was like,
"Get
no,
on the bus
what?
And come down here. Get on the bus and come down here, dear. You got to sit front row. We need to get you up close."
He was so
yeah.
good about that, right? And so I think our entire community, hopefully, is
yeah.
in that same bent of getting us together
right.
to take on challenges, right? With this White
yeah.
House event, I really felt like it was more of like, I called it kind of like a X-Men first class experience, like, you know, next gen.
yeah, I gotcha.
The rising, like, you know, other people, you know,
yeah.
folks that you haven't heard of before, folks that you know, are doing amazing work, who are getting published,
yeah.
who work for amazing organizations, who are publishing great things.
Yeah.
So if we
yeah.
can start rolling that out on really quickly, you know, we have conferences like the Because Conference,
yeah.
The Transcending Boundaries Conference. We have all these different opportunities for people to acknowledge our communities,
yeah.
right? All these organizations to support. And I think that it's hard for people. They're like, well, I want to help homeless teens. It's like, yeah, they're bisexual too.
yeah.
All
exactly.
of our organizations deal with homeless teens every year. We deal with a
yeah.
ton of poor mental health. We deal with a ton of resource-driven work or advocacy work that allows us to advocate for those populations.
Yeah.
Right? And without us in the room, they truly
oh, yeah.
will not talk about us.
Right.
Right. And that's got to
right.
be for everybody, for elders, for disabled,
yes. Yes.
for all of us. When you come
well
at
said.
It from a bisexual perspective, you
yeah.
therefore are thinking about everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Because
it's, that's,
I always
that's
say
the
people,
point. That's the
I
point that improves. And it improves those organizations.
That, right?
I mean, I think it improves when you do that because my, you know, my ears always go up to check. Okay, so you've got the B on the label, you've got the B on the letterhead or whatever. So where are you getting your, you know, your bisexual, you know, information from? Who is advising you on this, and where is it coming from? And just finding that out oftentimes when it's not there, and then finding out how to encourage that to happen. You know what I'm saying? Because then most people do want it to happen nowadays if you approach it in the right way and you're media trained. And of course, if they don't, then it's a whole another story as well. There's another way to respond to it with the kind of leaders that we have to, you know, do another level of instruction here. But I think the interesting thing is sussing that out and finding out, okay, you know, my sensitivity in my ears obviously is to do with stigma as well. And when that crosses the two, I'm on it all the time. But I like what you just said, because so many times the other work that all these people that are either in that room or watching or elsewhere do that brings the B along with the other work into that cohesive overall conversation has been crucial. That's where another form of erasure has been happening if we're not in that
oh, yeah.
room.
Oh yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, we have
yeah.
to sometimes make our, we have to sometimes make our own rooms, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I had spoken with an organization, I won't name which one, but they, you know, they are a trainer in racial justice,
yep.
really well-regarded. And we were talking about, you know, them doing some trainings with the bi community
yep.
at what became the UN-conference. And,
yep.
you know, I was very interested in helping to try to do this. But one of the things that stymied us is that these people, you know, disclosed that their organization was predominantly people that we, they said this to me, you would identify
yeah.
us as bisexual, but none of us would ever use that word.
Word. Yeah.
Right? And then they wanted
yeah.
to tell me about systemic oppression. And I had to say to them, I had to say, like, I need you to know
yeah.
that what you think about yourself,
yeah.
right, what you think about this word is wrong.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
probably won't be the first person or the last person to have told you this, but you should look
yeah.
deeper into it, because right now you're perpetuating on that
yeah.
same axis of oppression.
Yeah.
Right? And
yep.
people have to understand that. They have to understand that bisexuals are not beloved by pretty much anyone. Right?
Yep.
But we love our own, and we love everyone, right? David
well,
Bowie loves
the,
everybody, you know?
Here's the incredible thing. Take this just to my level, just for 1 second, and you can see how quickly this training and everything that we do, I think, helps so many other things. And this isn't an ad. I was talking to Scott just before, but it reminds me, because I just put a new article out on the Huffington Post called To Serve and to Stigmatize? All right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting it from the old days of it's a wordplay on when I grew up watching TV on Adam 12 on the L.A. Police cars. The motto is right there, right printed on the door every time you watch the show, to serve and to protect. Right.
Right.
And do you remember I think someone even brought it up this most recent time in Washington. Again, there was some type of a report in which, and I'm not going to, we don't need to use the names here, but it was asking who you would most to least want to have as your neighbor, I think it was. And
mm-hmm.
the last two out of like a list of more than 100, the only thing that was, I think bisexuals were the last thing on the list, and the second to last thing or something like that was an intravenous
yeah.
drug user. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that report, right?
that's the Herrick study. Yeah, Gregory Herrick. Right. I think that's UC Davis.
And I know it's dated. I know it's totally dated.
It's not even that dated, though. People are still utilizing it because it's such a landmark piece of work.
Right.
Right?
Because
it's heterosexual, right? It's not looking at, you know, straight people. Right? Just their idea of stigma. And guess what?
Yep.
You know, let's be honest. The vast majority of people out there are straight, right? Like, when they tell me, I always say, if a straight person says I'm straight, I believe them. Right? If a person says I'm gay, I'm like, hallelujah, I believe you too.
You too.
But I really would love if you believed me as well.
Well, here.
Right?
Here.
When I say that I am bisexual and I have said
this for
many years now.
Yeah.
Right? And it's been an evolution not of dealing with if I am bisexual, but how do I discuss, talk about that? How do I share that? I tell people all the time, please take your time. Consider it a special flower that you share with people who will not destroy it. Right?
Well,
understand
so well
that
said.
People don't see you, right? You have to protect yourself. You really do. And people
learn
that. And it's always that really hard, you know, we had that on our Comic-Con panel. Right? And you were so proud. Like, our Comic-Con panel was
how'd that go?
So tight. So
that's
good.
Brilliant.
We were full. It was the biggest, the most well-attended LGBT panel. We were, like, the last day, like, the last panel
session,
the second to last. Like, it was...
Wow.
It was really meaningful to see how many people... We had this one
person
who was wearing that bisexual T-shirt. You know, the one that I think is in Boston. You know the pin you guys have? In Boston with the pink and the blue triangle.
There
was this elder gentleman there. He said he had been coming to every single Comic-Con wearing that T-shirt, right, since he got the T-shirt. And he said, I've been waiting for something bisexual this whole time. And finally, it was like this explosion of bisexuals everywhere, you know.
Brilliant.
Rebecca, you know, Sugar, like, comes out from Steven Universe, there's all these bi people going, I'm bisexual. I mean, it was very special. So I think that when we really decide to come out, right, and we tell people why we're doing it, because people will say, why are you telling me I want to have sex with you? And they say that that is called biphobia, that belief.
Right.
That's a false belief. I have no interest in you. I am simply identifying my ability to be attracted to more than one gender. And it turns out that me being able to identify that to other people will save my life.
Yeah.
Right?
It'll improve my life and improve my community.
And really improve the whole world, though, right?
Right.
Because we're not, you know, doing all these mental health. We don't have as many mental health issues when we're out, when we're being taken care of. And people will tell me, especially stigma survivors, they'll say, you know, I didn't think it was important for me to bring this up because it would super stigmatize.
Right.
And
right.
You know, and I tell them, I say, I understand not wanting to bring your bisexuality into, you know, a survival situation. I completely get it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
you might want to at some point revisit, right, what it was like to be a bisexual survivor.
Yeah.
Right. What it was like for that person who might next have to go through what you went through, right? Because for us in our community, we know something, which is that the press does not actually treat us all that well, right?
Yeah.
There is a real interest in looking at bisexual situations and lifting them up under this pseudo kind of care situation that quickly turns into these people have problems.
Yep.
Right? And that's really unfortunate. It's been unfortunate for several celebrities who've had to just stop talking about their sexuality because every time they talk about anything, it burns.
Yeah.
Right? And I tell people, I'm like, think about that. Being bi burns. Being gay, hallelujah. How's your kids and your dogs? And right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So we want people to really recognize that that study, you know, like you said, is a very valid study.
The point I was making, the point is just amazing here in the sense that this is just another payoff, though. It's the sense these cross-pollination points for me are amazing. When I feel the term bisexual as a stigma, I really am charged up, and obviously oftentimes in my daily job in helping people really take back and heal their identities and get, you know, the label that society is putting on them for whatever that stigma is not their identity, and start to heal that, you know, like you're saying, that's where later on people want to, you know, think about and possibly reclaim how this experience means something to them. But for myself, yeah, just now, this latest article I just wrote is actually about the public shaming that some, it's limited, but it's a trend now in more than one state, that law enforcement has been putting on social media the photographs of apparently drug overdosed adults to
I
shame
tell
them.
People, we're all interlinked, Kev. We're yep. all interlinked. The rise
and this,
of the police
and you know
force
what I'm saying?
Class.
It's,
I mean, Tom,
yeah.
it's not good.
And
for
it's amazing the ability to be able to see these other things, enter into the conversation, use the ability and what I've learned as, like, you know, as you realize through the bisexual community and experiencing something that, though still in many ways, even others who may have the same sexual orientation see it as a stigma and can't even express it. It's amazing when I'm able to turn that into a beyond just an orientation, but a badge of honor, I would consider it, when I'm in the room with folks like, you know, that you put together in D.C. there. But then to go beyond it and then be able to feel where stigma is harming others and lead in that conversation, it's really, yeah, the hair goes up on the back of my head, how much work. And this brings me – this is where Scott's so good. I hope he's still there breathing. I know he's somewhere in the background there. But the thing is, Scott's so good about it, and I don't want to cut this off, is now, Faith, we're at this point. I think it's so crucial. We got election. We got all these other things going on. But – what for you, because so many people I feel sometimes after a visit like this might be like, this is wonderful, and then there might be a sense of, oh my goodness, what's next? Do you know what I'm saying? For you personally, and for what you hope for, and I know we're all hoping for sanity in the election, but what do you hope is next for the movement and for you personally in this? Because it's such a wonderful point we're at right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that hopefully we're going to see, like, this, you know, proliferation, right, of love, right, of people really
yeah.
feeling like, wow, you know, I want to support that bi person in my LGBT center or my local
yep.
nonprofit that's always wanted to do work. Let's give them a shot. Let's give them $5, $10, $15, $20, $30,000, right? And what
right,
we really need
right.
to see is that really kind of consistent engagement, right? Because a lot of us are subsisting
right.
on, you know, little tiny dollars, like $4,000 or $5,000
right.
grants, right? And people don't understand. They're like, how are you doing this? It's like, oh, well, we just, you know, as someone in the UK just eloquently said, they're like, we burn our leaders as fuel, right? Like,
yeah,
we sleep
yeah.
in each other's houses, right? We feed
yeah.
each other our food, right? We
yeah.
do things on a community level that's very hard for people to understand. And especially
yeah.
folks who come in who are new, they're not used to that. They're like, what do you
right.
mean we're using so-and-so's father to make the T-shirts? It's like, yeah,
yeah.
what do you mean? We have to
yeah.
do this way because we have no money. We're paying out of pocket. There's not, like, some fancy, rich, straight guy someplace. I mean, let me know if there is, people. But, you know, I actually have one. But, like, you know, for the most part.
If you know
yeah,
a gay one, send
him
my direction.
Then.
I am listening for that part. Wait
see,
a
that's what got Scott back. Did you hear that?
Listen, everybody wants one. My husband, I'm very blessed. He works at Grindr. He takes care of my family. He enables my advocacy, you know, at such a high level. I always tell folks, I'm like, listen, if you
yeah.
want to support my advocacy, support Grindr. But
yeah.
I think that it's one of these things that's interesting for our family, right? Because he's a developer, and I told him, I would rather you're at Grindr, because when he told people at DirecTV when he was leaving, they were like,
yeah.
oh, you're going to bring shame onto your family. Like, how
yeah.
are your kids going to go to school? Like, they're highly stigmatized.
Yeah.
Highly stigmatizing
yeah.
of something that we consider super norm in our family, which is same
yeah.
sex attraction and love and support and validation and, you know, hotness. So
yeah.
it's one of these things where I always
well
tell folks it's a good fit for our family, right? Because of
yeah.
who we are and what we talk to our kids about. And because,
yep.
you know, my son, you know, right now is using girl and boy, you know, like dresses. And we do gorilla runs at Target, right? Because turns out Target is not a safe place to shop with a gender nonconforming child. There's a bunch of, like, super conservative people hiding out in the in the gorilla voice section. I swear to God.
Oh, no.
You know, so people just run through there. I'm like, boom, 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 extra small. we got six dresses, and we ran out the door. I was like, you can wear them at home, you know what I mean? So, and he wants to go out. We took him, and we did. We took him out recently, and it was a very positive experience. People were very polite. I felt like, wow, so much has changed in the last, like, 10 years, where my son, who identifies as a boy-girl, as a non-binary, can wear a dress, feel super pretty, and still say, yeah, I use he pronouns.
Cool.
Right? And he's 4 years old. So I think that's a blessing. I tell people, let your kids be who they are. Right? Who knows who my son will be? If he ends up being straight and, you know, cisgender instead of, you know, trans or gender nonconforming, agender, fine.
Yep.
I'll love him no matter who he is.
Mm.
Right?
So
I always
said.
Tell people, let's do that. I think that is what we want the bisexual agenda to be. Right?
Yeah.
When people say, what is your agenda? It's like, man, it's like, let love be, like Lorraine said, right? At the very end of our session. So I'm excited about letting people see that. We're going to try and cut those clips up for people and send them to folks as a thank yous for participating so that individuals have little clips of themselves.
So lovely.
And,
so
you know,
lovely.
I definitely suggest folks check it out on the White House's website. Because, you know, or on the, I think it's on the YouTube, the White House's YouTube. You really
we'll
say
have the connections.
White
we'll
House.
Put it up again too. We'll put it up again on the page. We'll make sure they get the information.
Yeah,
be sure to give all the social media for Binet and everything for us, Faith. Let us know how people can get a hold of you if you have a personal social media or Binet has a social media or a website we can follow. Why don't you give all that information?
Yeah, go ahead and list all that now. Nice and slow. Tell them how they can find you. Yep, go ahead.
So yeah, you can find me at twitter.com/thefaith. That's THEFAYTH.
Yep.
So, or you can find Binet USA on twitter.com/Binet, BINET USA. So we have a ton of people in our Facebook group, which is super active. And you can find that on facebook.com/groups/Binet USA, which is another place a lot of people come and seek support, and we send them off to you. The individual groups that exist. There's about 100. You can find those groups on the Binet USA website, binetusa.org, or Kevin, byresource.net's got a whole map list there too, right?
Yep, absolutely.
That's
and
got global.
Yep, absolutely. You can just find Bisexual Resource Center is another way you can find these things. But right now what I wanted to make sure is that people can find you as well, Faith, because it's not just for leaders. This is for all different allies, all people that are interested. There is a way to connect in the bi community on one of those sites that Faith just said. If not, we'll find it for you because there's plenty, plenty of room for all the good work that needs to be done. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, don't forget, there's so many intersections between us. Definitely check out, I always say, Pansexual Pride on Facebook is one of the biggest places for folks who identify as pan. You know, there's lots of groups for folks who are non-binary or ace or intersex or trans or gender nonconforming. So Facebook turns out to be like our jam. Like every marketing study of the bisexual community, like when they break us out, they always find like this curious, like they seem to love Facebook. And there's like a hidden bisexual, because you know, a secret group, you know, you're visible, you're not visible. It's very, you know, there's naked people here and there, you know, whatever.
I'll end on this thought. Scott, you can take over from here because this has been so lovely for me to have the chance to talk to Faith because usually we're working so hard every time we're in the same room, you know. And Faith, dear, I just with every capital letter love you, dear, and love what you do, and I'm so proud of you and thankful you joined us today. But I just want to let our listeners know one thing: a visual. I'm sure my lovely wife is going to use it on the social media as well for putting the show out there at some point. But there's that wonderful shot of you waving the bi flag, and I took that photo, and I literally just took that photo. I just snapped it right after our second visit to the White House. That's a whole other story. I actually wrote about that. Remember, I wrote an article called "The Faith I've Seen in Washington D.C." And even though I spelt it the other way, there's a reason for that. But it's about you, and you know that. But the interesting part of that, it is if I ever had to think of one visual that captures everything you were just talking about. It just brought it to me when you said that. And I literally just lifted up the camera. It wasn't hard. I just snapped the photo. And your pride in that moment was so infectious that I would like everyone to think about that's how the movement really, for me, feels. It's welcoming, it's proud, and it's so many things to so many people who need that safe, inclusive space to find their community. So you did it in that one shot, Faith. It was really beautiful. I just thought of that.
Hey, well, I'm part of a whole group of people that I walk with, that I walk behind, and you know,
yep.
I'm really excited about this next year, trying to take for myself like a bunch of steps backwards in the sense of, you know, doing other things. I still am doing a lot of advocacy, maybe going back to stand up. Had to step
Yay!
Back to stand up. So, well, you know, it's going to be an amazing,
yeah.
amazing 2017, I hope. So thank you guys
okay.
so much for having me on.
Well, Faith, thank you so much for being on. We definitely appreciate having you. It was an excellent conversation to listen to from the background there. I'm glad I didn't snip it all up for you guys because it was really, you guys had an amazing conversation there.
She's the best.
All of our listeners, I'm sure, are enjoying every second of it. We have to have you back on the show real soon. And when you get your stand-up up and running, we'll have you on the Left and Straight show and talk to my LGBT community
yep.
there for my entertainment show. So that'll be exciting stuff.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yay. Yay.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, stay
Thanks.
On the line for us, Faith. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break here. Kevin and I will be back to wrap up in just a little bit. I'm talking to the amazing Faith Cheltenham, the president of Vinet USA. Listen to Left of Straight Show. We're going to listen to a little Blake MacGyver, It Gets Better. And Kevin and I will be back to wrap it up in just a couple of minutes.
Without a friend, I see a soul who thinks that it's the end. A broken will's the hardest thing to mend. I try to understand. I know you're hurting, I can see your pain, but you've got a future where there's
And we are back. That is Blake McIver with It Gets Better. Great, fantastic conversation, Kevin. She is an amazing ally and advocate for the bisexual community.
Yeah, and a truly wonderful person. I was really, really happy to have her on the show. Thank you, Scott. That was really, really a wonderful show. It meant a lot to a lot of folks, and yeah, it was just really a good time. And I suppose it was good for you to be able to sit back and breathe, I guess. But when she's doing her entertainment gig, man, you're going to want her on Left of Straight as well. I'll make
sure
she gets
in touch
with her.
Oh, yeah, she was great. She was great. And if anyone out there missed, like I said, she emceed the event. Kevin was part of the event and got to read one of his amazing poems. Go ahead and look that up for YouTube. Look up for White House. It's on the White House feed, and just kind of do different searches for the bisexual resource meeting.
Or you can just find it on Healing Stigma. It's on our Healing Stigma Facebook as well. So it's easy. It'll be there. We'll get it out
super
to folks. Because I know, I think the Blake McIver song was Singing to You. It Gets Better. We got to get you and your mom some chicken soup here real shortly. So
there you go. We can do it. Well, guys, please listen to us every week right here on Thursday, 2 p.m. Pacific time. 5
yep.
p.m. Eastern time. Check out the website. If you've never missed an episode, you can go back and get all the information of our guests. They each have their own individual pager. That's at www.healingstigmaradio.com. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at Heal Stigma Radio or on Facebook at Healing Stigma Radio. And we're just so thankful to have you all listening and can't wait to be back
yep.
next Thursday.
Yeah, and the Thursday
all right,
after
great
that.
Job.
Hey,
thanks,
Scott.
Scott,
before you run. Before you run, I just want to let everyone know, I had a lovely, lovely chance to be interviewed by Kelly Rutley, a wonderful, wonderful healer who's going to be doing a lot with the Female Fat Loss Summit. She's going to be a guest of ours in 2 weeks. And just before you run there, I just want to let you know, she is a wonderful, wonderful person I had the chance to interview with this past weekend, a whole bunch of stuff for Healing Stigma for that conference. So we got some really, really great shows coming up. So now I'm going to let you go get that chicken soup because I need you to be healthy and listening for these next couple of shows there, Scott, and a whole bunch more.
Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you for carrying the heavy wood today. I do appreciate you carrying it. Big
pleasure
chatting half today. You guys have been listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. We will see you next week. If it's Thursday, it's Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great day, everybody.
Take care.